Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to your leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman. In this episode, Neurology Live editor Marco Meglio is joined by Dr. Brian Davis, a clinical health psychology fellow at the Cleveland Clinic's Mellen Center for MS Treatment and Research. Dr. Davis discussed what he took away from a recent study that he and colleagues undertook exploring the impact that masculinity and gender norms can have on men with multiple sclerosis.
What sparked my interest was being within health psychology. I kind of had a background with interest looking at traditional masculinity norms. I did a dissertation research where I looked at masculinity development in men from different cultures. And then with being on the health psychology side of things, working in different populations, so whether that's in chronic disease or this was in, I was in oncology, I was in substance use, I was in primary care, and I just kept seeing this consistency of men having challenges in terms of health behaviors due to the conflict of gender norms. Mm-hmm. So with my background extensively in that area anyway, and then needing that with health psychology, you know, when I was starting here at the Mellen Center, that's immediately where I was looking because I was interested in how men were dealing with a disease such as MS. And when I dove into the research, right away, when you look at anything related to gender, what you see is the prevalence rates. You know, women have MS almost three times more than men. And you didn't see a lot of either resources or just interventions or just much mention about men dealing with MS. So that was one area where I wanted to explore more. And really, there was a void in the research in terms of looking at some of the variables that I'm interested in. So in terms of kind of rigidly adhering to gender roles, because I just think about, you know, before I even got started, I thought about the premise of it, right? So I think about us as men trying to adhere to gender norms based on societal pressures is difficult in general. So I was already in the literature looking at gender role strain and gender role conflict and things like this, where men just on a societal level have a difficulty in terms of living up to gendered expectations, whether that being a provider, being the breadwinner, being strong man, being, you know, independent, being emotionally restrictive. I mean, it's hard to do all of those things. And it's also hard to do all those things in many different situations. And that's where men kind of find a lot of strain is, you know, for example, maybe being emotionally restrictive here doesn't really work here, right? And being the provider here doesn't really work here. And so that's where that strain comes from, just on the overall general level. And I think about MS, and I think about men dealing with physical disability, cognitive disability, increased levels of things like anxiety, stress, depression. I'm thinking about that as a layer on top, creating even more difficulty. And when you think about that, so if you have men really rigidly adhering to traditional gender norms of being the provider, being the breadwinner, being the independent, strong person, right? Maybe athletic and all these roles that we want to stick to, and then we're diagnosed with MS, and that just gets completely flipped over, right? Their identity can potentially be completely flipped. So then it's them navigating this process of self-identification, you know, trying to get back to maybe old performance of gender or but they can't do it as well, and what does that mean? So now, and so that turmoil, that's really what I was interested in, and I didn't really find that anywhere. So I was in my head, I was thinking, you know, I think we need to be looking at this and really conceptualizing men in terms of you know, their experience and just how they're navigating this process to then kind of illuminate this idea of how can we best support them and be there for them throughout this process. And that's really where it all kind of stemmed from for me. And I was really happy to get started. And, you know, we do have some results that are hot off the press. So, it's been a very exciting experience so far, and I'm really happy with some of the attention too.
We both talked to Amy Sullivan, who you obviously know and are close with, for recently for the CMSC meeting last week or a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And she specifically stressed the importance of interdisciplinary care and behavioral medicine. What can you talk about the importance of behavioral medicine in MS, and why is this so especially relevant for men in this disease?
Absolutely. I think, you know, here at the Mellon Center, I'm very proud to say that, you know, in terms of a MS clinic, we're the only housed behavioral medicine kind of department within an MS clinic in the nation. So at the same time, that's also a little bit frustrating because, you know, this is something that, in my opinion, needs to be within the integrative model, just as physical therapy is, social work is, you know, occupational therapy. I think we all play an important role because MS is very complex. It's not just it's a very complex disease. So it's not just touching one area. So we just as it's complex in itself, we need to kind of come at it in an integrative way to really be there and care for. And in terms of that for men, I think it's just another avenue for us to be there for not only overall patient populations, but also for men too. You know, I think that when we're able to have these discussions about gender and to have more resources and to have more discussions about these things, and what we're going to see here is potential increased levels of treatment adherence from men more open to coming in and talking about their experiences in terms of support groups, individual sessions, you name it. It's more of men participating within their treatment rather than, I don't want to say, rejecting, but just having this conflict with it. I think that you know, everything you think about in terms of men, I mean, coming in and help seeking and being treated kind of goes against everything that we previously talked about. So us having kind of this integrative model that includes behavioral medicine is so important to be there and well-round kind of the integrative model for the individual patients.
And do you feel as though assessments like the CMNI tool should be incorporated more frequently into patient visits than they normally are right now?
Sure. I think right now they're not included whatsoever. And I think that could be an area. I'm not sure if the CMNI 46, they're exploring making a shorter inventory. So they're looking, I believe, that there's a CMNI 30 that just came out. So as everything in the assessment world, we're getting smaller and smaller to be kind of more efficient. So potentially, yeah, I think that would be great. I think something that can, there's other models too. I think there's the male role norms inventory by Dr. Levant. That one's relatively brief, I think it's 21 questions. So yeah, there's opportunities here that we can screen for this, because what the results of my study have shown is that, you know, adherence to traditional masculinity norms, kind of in that rigid way, we found associations with higher disability status, increased risky health behaviors, also lower levels of physical health scores, health promotion, seeking social support. I mean, these are the really big deals. So I think when we can identify this as someone that maybe has certain, and I don't want to kind of cloak this as kind of traditional masculinity is all bad. But what we're seeing is there's a nuanced relationship here where certain gender roles don't jive well in terms of treatment adherence and maybe have an increase in risky health behaviors and seeking social support and health promotion. And when we can identify those, just as we do with depression, just as we do with anxiety, this can be a tool that can be used to really support the individual patient and kind of steer intervention that's that can be really salient and very effective.
And you just said that you'd like to see it be more integrated into the normal care of things. Can you talk about some of the recommended interventions for patients who may be struggling with these specific challenges that are current right now?
Sure. I think in terms of specific intervention, there isn't necessarily a protocol or a standardized way of doing. What I found to be most effective is when men are given the opportunity to almost take the mask off, you know, and really discuss some of the difficulties that they're having, whether that be with whatever provider, maybe it's a neurologist, maybe it's a psychologist, maybe it's a social worker. I just think having the opportunity to, from our end, the provider end, to compassionately and from an awareness perspective, have these discussions, and it almost allows the men to, from a foundational sense, really talk more about what the struggle is, and it's okay to talk about that. And I think that when we kind of can take away that that shield and that conflict that they're having, by, you know, I think us as providers really play a role in lowering that a little bit in terms of how we're coming at men and how we're having the conversation, I think is really important. I think once we do that, because we have a really great men's group here that we started, I've seen a lot of referrals for men, and we've seen a lot of success. And I think when you do that, it allows for this, you know, more flexible way to identify themselves, where, you know, what happens here when we rigidly adhere to traditional gender norms is we kind of polarize our experiences. We're either doing it or we're not, right? We're either providing or we're not. We're either, you know, emotionally restricting or we're crying. You know, it's, but really there's a lot of gray area there. So it's really flexibly having these discussions, and that's a lot of where we steer things. And when you do that, it allows men to have the opportunity to re-identify with how they're providing. Maybe it's not the same way, right? But it's still happening. You know, so things like that, that's really where we steer things in terms of intervention. You know, flexibility is one of my favorite words. And again, adding in that self-compassion and really giving men the opportunity to again, not get rid of some of these gender norms, but be flexible within them to further navigate their process. But it's also coming from an independent standpoint where they're defining what that looks like, and you're just supporting them in that process.
I think it's kind of goes a little bit hand in hand with how the barriers of mental health have kind of been broken down a little bit over the years, and the stigmas behind those kinds of things, that, you know, it's okay to talk about things with people, and you should be discussing with clinicians and getting their expert advice on stuff that you may not be as comfortable talking about. So with that said, what do you foresee futuristic-wise as the long-term impact of these types of conversations becoming more normalized between patients and their providers for maybe even future studies too?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there in terms of, you know, accessibility, in terms of help seeking. You know, you're creating a new environment that's a supportive one, a safe one that feels maybe a little bit more comfortable for the men coming in. And I think in the future, you know, I think this is so helpful because we're really just scratching the surface with this. You know, when I first started doing this research, I really had to dial it back because it got like, hey, just, you know, not so much, just start here and let's build on. So that's the plan, because really we're just identifying, like I said, certain gender norms, and we're also giving credit to what gender norms are actually helpful in terms of treatment adherence and health promotion, and which ones are more tricky and kind of have more of a conflicted relationship. What does this look like with different generations of men, older men compared to younger men? What does this look like with different races of men? I think these are all really good questions. And I think, again, with just scratching the surface, we can really identify a lot of these variables. And again, informing ourselves, informing us and the provider, and to know how to be there specifically for these men dealing with this disease. You know, with doing this research, it's been really eye-opening. I think that just as we talked about MS being very subjective and very complex, I mean, you're looking at a lot of different experiences from men where it looks different for a lot of them, and they're all coming in from different experiences too. So you know, I don't really want to focus this as a, here's what we do for men because this all looks the same, but it's really more of a nuanced relationship just as we look at the disease. So really looking at this style of research really pulls at that too, where we can really get really good information to use. And I think that, you know, having the, you know, mine was relatively quantitative as well, which is important, but it's what's a little bit different that I think is you're taking the quantitative data and you're really contextualizing it. And I want to keep doing that and what this looks like in me from the clinical psychology side. I mean, that's really what we do, right? So we take the information, we contextualize it, and we kind of pull it apart from and think about what this looks like and how applicable this can be. And, you know, when I was pulling information and results from this, I had patients just popping up in my head. Oh, yeah, this is this. And I've seen this. So I think that bridge of what you've seen and bridging that quantitative data with presentation and then thinking about what interventions can be helpful and then how we can be flexible as well with that based on the individual, I think that's really important. You know, the whole study was looking at, you know, the conformity of masculinity and kind of those gender norms and its effects on, you know, coping and health behaviors and quality of life in men with MS. So in terms of traditional masculinity adherence, so high scores in the CMNI 46, what we found was positive relationships, so higher levels of disability status and risky health behaviors. So when we're seeing increased masculinity scores, we're seeing increased levels of risky health behaviors. So when I think about that, that's like men maybe doing behaviors that kind of go against what they maybe should be doing. You know, for example, you know, kind of getting up and I'm going to go for that drive, even though I'm really fatigued, or I'm going to try to lift this thing that's really heavy, even though I'm having numbness in my legs. So it's things like that that can really kind of conflict there. Traditional masculinity adherence also, we see with higher levels there, we see lower levels of physical health scores, health promotion, seeking social support. And then, so those are very important factors. Some of those are very important coping skills. In terms of health promotion, so if we see increased masculinity adherence with lower health promotion, what we found with health promotion is that when we have health promotion, we have increase of seeking social support. We have an increase in planful problem solving, so thinking things through, as well as positive reappraisal, so kind of positive meaning making. Okay, so health promotion is a big deal. So we're seeing high traditional masculinity scores, especially in the form of emotional control, so emotional restriction. When we see that, we're seeing lower levels of health promotion. And when we think of health promotion, we're thinking social support, planful problem solving, and positive reappraisal, and talk about that re-identifying, right? So that's really useful information. On top of, in terms of specific coping skills, confrontative coping, so more of that aggressive, hostile, risk-taking type of coping, that's also positively related to healthy risky health behaviors. Okay, so again, in terms of how they're coping, so maybe they're coping, right? But how they're coping can dictate positive or negative results in terms of what that looks like. We found, in terms of overall mental health and overall physical health, attaining a college degree, so the more educated, we're seeing better mental health and better physical health. In terms of better mental health too, we're seeing people that are in a relationship, people that are married. So I think these are good factors to kind of piece and look for that we can determine when we meet with a man. Okay, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. This might be red flag, this might be positives, right? So then we can conceptualize the male and kind of navigate what's best for them. So these are some of the results that we've found so far. And I think these are really important. There's definitely this interaction with traditional masculinity adherence playing a role in, like we talked about, with health promotion and support seeking and planful problem solving and positive reappraisal, very important things. So yeah, so this is what we kind of pulled and we kind of just got this. So this is what I'm going to kind of write up and hopefully get out there and publish and share with a lot of people.
Thanks for listening to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. For more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.